and put on our website. So we choose things that we know that will have a tremendous interest to lots of people who are not able to be here. So in that regard, if I could remind you to please turn off your BlackBerries and cell phones so we can maintain the quality of the recording. Delighted to have this presentation as part of our Latin American track. We decided that after 5 years of the Ideas Festival, it was essential that we give appropriate recognition to the importance of Latin America, our relations with Latin America, but also Latin America in its own right. And for the topic today about U.S.-Mexico business relations for the new decade, we couldn't possibly have a better presenter than Ricardo Salinas, who is the president and CEO of the Salinas Group, which is one of the largest conglomerates of very important critical companies in Mexico. He is also very involved in the telecommunications business and is founder of what is now the second largest producer of Spanish language television in the world. And also of great significance and something that we are particularly excited about and relate to many things we do here at the Aspen Institute. He has been an extremely generous philanthropist and supporter of social entrepreneurs. He has founded not only a foundation that focuses on worthy causes in Mexico, but also one that focuses on the improvement of the conditions for Latinos in the United States. So it is my great pleasure to introduce Ricardo Salinas.
Well, thank you, and I'm really glad to be here at the Aspen Institute. Finally, I made it up here. I've heard about this conference for a long time, but for some reason or other, I couldn't make it, so I'm really happy. And I'm sure you all are enjoying the bright, sunny day outside. I won't be long. So I'm here to talk about the relationship between Mexico and the U.S. and what we can do to improve it. Of course, it's difficult. I mean, nobody can predict the future, but I have a pretty good sense of what's going on because of the different businesses that I'm in on both sides of the border. And my sense is that there's a huge human potential that we can develop together. You all know Mexico and the U.S. have been trading partners for a long time. Mexico is the third largest trading partner for the U.S. And the U.S. is the number one trading partner for Mexico. Now, this should put us thinking, what can we do to make it bigger and better? And the first thing is, we must not forget this huge border that we have, almost 2,000 miles. So Mexico is part of Latin America, of course, but it's also the next door neighbor. So it puts it in a whole different category. And we should all start by recognizing that. This whole southwest of the United States used to be Mexican territory. So there are very deep roots, culturally and ethnically, in all the southern part of the United States with Mexico. And that also makes us special. So I think there's a very good opportunity to use our proximity for mutual benefit and try to work as partners and not as antagonists. Because, as I said, the human capital that we have is highly complementary. So our relationship is much more profound than only drugs and illegal immigration, which is normally what you hear about when you talk about the Mexican border or the southern neighbor. It's always those two things, illegal trafficking of drugs and people. I think that is really short-sighted. So first, let's see where we are today. Because of NAFTA, we have had a huge benefit on both sides of the border. There's lots of success stories, and of course there's problems, like, you know, the transport thing that can't be arranged and some investments in Mexico that cannot be concreted. But The fact is that trade has tripled, and thousands of companies have flourished as a result of this. But we need to go beyond what we have achieved in these past 16 years. And it's not going to be easy because right now, North America is facing very strong competition, and the unemployment and all the economic situation conspires against long-term thinking. The big temptation right now is short-term and political considerations above all. I think it's a mistake. I think we could all benefit from this challenge. Can we imagine a future where Mexico and the U.S. are unbeatable together? I think yes. But we need to address some misconceptions first. First thing, Mexico does not challenge the U.S. in the same way that China or other Asian countries do, because we're complementary. So we need to combine, not to fight. Second, we know that the unemployment in the U.S. is at a critical level. It's a particularly bad time. But, like the Chinese saying, the best time to plant a tree, 20 years ago. The next best is today. So if we continue thinking about political considerations, we're never going to start. So we might as well start right now, thinking how we can get this human capital on both sides to be complementary. And instead of fighting over the tiny crumbs of the economic pie, we should try to make this pie bigger. Mexico has a large population. We're 106 million. And the median age is 26 years. So it's a very good source of labor for U.S. companies, and specifically for the service sector, which is the most important sector in the United States. Now, certainly at this point, many people in the U.S. are unemployed, and they're not going to take this in a good mood. But we have to realize that economic freedom is not a zero-sum game. And precisely trading implies a mutual benefit. We recognize this in financial investment, in merchandise imports. The only thing we negate it is when we talk about labor. So America had no second thoughts about importing stuff from China and selling it in Walmart. That's labor in the form of goods. I think that America would benefit tremendously by allowing free flow of people across the border in the same way that today we have free flow of information, of merchandise, of investments. So, politically different? Difficult? Yes. Viable? Yes. We should start. Now, for the future, I see two scenarios. We got the nightmare scenario and the dream scenario. Let me tell you what I'm thinking about. The nightmare scenario would be just a projection of the recent trends that we see in Mexico. Under this outcome, we have a less transparent Mexican government that leads to more violence, corruption, and less economic flexibility. And the lion's share of Mexico's life in economic and political terms is controlled by corrupted politicians, unions, and even criminals. And the economy slows down, less open. In this nightmare scenario, the labor market is inflexible, it has no opportunities for young workers, it leads to even more unemployment, and with this, violence and insecurity, crime rise on both sides of the border. This is a result of the lack of opportunities for the young. So, as Mexico becomes less stable, tourism is dramatically reduced, and foreign investment collapses. Lacking options at home, young Mexicans continue to flow into the U.S. illegally, increasing to more than 1 million people per year from 500,000 today. Mexico becomes a huge problem and not an opportunity for the U.S. That's a nightmare scenario. However, we also see another opportunity. We call it the dream scenario. Here, Mexico can develop a more transparent and accountable political system based upon what is best for the people rather than the interests of the politicians. This political transformation would promote reforms in the fiscal, labor, energy, education areas that reflect Mexico's economic interest rather than historical prejudices and makes full use or allows for full development of the human capital of our country. In this dream scenario, the Mexican economy and businessmen have a much lower tax rate, a much simpler tax structure. For example, payroll taxes are not taxed because we tax everything that's supposed to be a sin, right? Alcohol and tobacco. And we also tax payrolls. That's not a sin. We're supposed to be giving them employment. But why tax them? Because that's the only way that the government can now collect some money. There would be more competition, no monopolies. For example, in the energy sector, we have a huge government monopoly. That means Pemex, the oil company, and CFE, Comisión Federal de Electricidad, the power company. It's just one oil company, one power company. It all belongs to the federal government. And as a result, we are faced with the typical problems of dealing with a federal agency, which are high prices, low quality, and corruption, all in one package. And energy is not an inconsequential input into the economy. If energy is mispriced, the whole economic cycle is in deep trouble. So we could reform that, and we could allow competition in such a vital sector. If we remove some more regulations that are still there despite of NAFTA, the bilateral trade could grow to $500 billion by 2020 from $300 billion today. And there would be more industries that complement the U.S. economy. The country would have a powerful middle class, and extreme poverty index would be cut from 20 to 10%. And Mexico could be a $1.5 trillion market for U.S. businesses that want to sell or export goods or services into our country. As a result of all this, Mexico would be a much better attractive place to live, to visit. And you might not be aware of this, but Mexico is already the number one destination for U.S. citizens living abroad. The AARP estimates that some 600,000 Americans are currently making their homes in Mexico. So this number could easily go to 2 million people by 2020 in this dream scenario. And who knows? Maybe in 10 years, some of you could be living in beautiful, affordable Mexico in a beach community. Like Elliot mentioned, La Paz, huh? Very nice place, and very close to here. And you could learn Spanish by watching your favorite novela from TV Azteca. Yeah. So this dream scenario is ambitious, but it is achievable. Now, we've got to get there. We've got to break some paradigms. The thing is, we need to change things, and change is always difficult. But it can be done. As I said before, we need to have a more transparent and accountable political system. Today, we have this horrendous monster called partidocracia. Partidocratica. I don't know how to say this in English. But it's a structure that's taking root in Mexico, and it basically means that only politicians are allowed to participate in politics. And that's a pretty strong affirmation. But that's what it means, because normal citizens like you and me cannot aspire to form a party, cannot aspire to be postulated unless they're part of a party, cannot create campaigns of advocacy or promotion. It's not allowed by the current electoral law. Okay? The parties in power have created this ring fence around their interests. And nobody can touch them. We need to change that, and we need to put people and their interests front and center, and not the political parties and their politicians. Under this more open system, we need urgently these reforms in the fiscal, labor, energy, and education, which sectors which are not producing the results that our country want. And we can do this by copying some of the American structures or institutions, but not all of them. We had a very bad idea some years ago, where we decided to copy the Sarbanes-Oxley law. Isn't that great? Could have copied anything else, but we could choose to copy that. As a result, we have, in the past 8 years, have 8 IPOs in the Mexican bolsa. So there are plenty of bad policies in the U.S. Mexicans should not look to the U.S. as a panacea for everything. Some things are very good, and we should adopt those. The energy sector, for example, why is it that the only kind of gasoline that Mexicans can buy is Pemex gasoline? Why is it that the power that we have, the energy system, most every company needs to have backup generators and power cleaners because the quality of the energy is so bad and so expensive? Why is it that that is a tax collection mechanism? We don't need to keep those things in our country. We can get rid of them. In the labor market, for example, it's not allowed to hire people by the hour. It's not allowed to have temporary workers. And as I said before, we have these taxes on payrolls, when what we're trying to do is to create jobs. This is the number one challenge for politicians, is create jobs. Why would we tax jobs? Yeah. So what can I ask from our friends in the U.S.? A great deal is not lost, but attitude. I'd say an open mind. What we need is a long-term vision under which you preserve an open mind towards Mexico and the region. Let's call it the neighborhood. And we need to avoid some dangerous traps, like the hot topics of today: drugs, illegal aliens. And let me talk a little bit about that. For Americans, the drug issue is these mafiosos bring drugs into America. And the very bad people, which are outside of Mexico, outside of the U.S. For Mexicans, there's a mafia here that's totally undercover, and nobody identifies it. It turns all these drugs into huge amounts of money that flow into our country and corrupt everything with the aid of high-powered weapons, which are freely available in this country. So when you think of drugs going into the U.S., we think of huge amounts of money and arms that are killing our people left, right, and center. Just to give you an idea, since 2007, when this president, Calderon, is in power, the U.S. has lost 1,300 people in the war in Iraq. 1,300. Mexico has lost 15,000. And in this year, there's 30 people per day dead in drug-related violence. Why would we do that? What kind of war is our country? You know? And there's no end in sight. I mean, from when I remember being a little boy, we've been on this war on drugs. I think we totally lost it here. And it's not an issue of finger-pointing, but I think we can find solutions together. And together is the key word. For example, the definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing, expect a different result. We've been doing this war on drugs for too long. We should move on. And there's two ways. One way, we make it a legal product like alcohol and tobacco, which I personally disagree with, and I think would be a big mistake. But it would be better than what we're doing. And the other is we give them away for free as part of a treatment. The caught nothing. And that would totally kill the market, kill the mafias. And without money, they can't buy politicians, they can't buy arms, and they don't, they're not an issue. Now, the Americans are very, very smart. You know, you guys did this in the 20s. You created prohibition. And then 13 years later in 1933, America decided that they had had too much and that the violence, the corruption of the mafias was too much. And they decided to amend again the Constitution and allow alcohol. So my position is we should stop prohibition to get at the core of the drug problem. Give them away. It's a health problem. It's a terrible thing that people are on drugs. We just try to help them. But let's not make criminals of, you know, 500,000 people are in the jail in the United States. And I don't know how many hundred thousands in Mexico. But it's just not worth it. The corruption and the violence is just not worth it. And the other issue is immigration. It's almost the same thing. Every time we hear of an illegal alien, I ask you to think, there's an illegal employer on this side. Why? Because you need this kind of services. Americans need the services that immigrants are providing. So instead of making it a black market, an illegal market, we should make it open. And that would assure that everybody gets a fair treatment. There's many cases of abuse by illegal employers towards illegal aliens. But it shouldn't be like that. And that provides even worse, more unfair competition for the legal labor market. So I think that prohibition has never worked, neither in drugs nor in immigration. And especially with a 2,000-mile border, where people can walk across almost everywhere. That's not going to get better. So we should also change. Things that are not working, we should think about changing. So, immigration, you know, there's all these people coming into the U.S. looking for an opportunity, looking for a better life. There's lots of misconceptions about what these people mean for the U.S. For example, many, many people think that they're a burden to the U.S. taxpayers. When it's actually the opposite, when these people come and work illegally, they get deductions on their paychecks for Social Security or income taxes, and then they don't use them because they're not legal. So they're actually giving much more in terms of fiscal load than they are taking. So in closing, these are just some of the steps that we need to take. And I hope that you recognize with me that Americans and Mexicans have everything to gain and nothing to lose from having a prosperous neighborhood. It may take some time for this realization to take hold because there's been a long history of distrust. But the fact is that neither country is going to disappear. And our fate is to be neighbors. So we could always sit in our hands and do nothing about our relationship, and the opportunities, the problems could keep on being neglected, or we could collaborate to create a better future and become unbeatable together in the global markets. We need to find some more creative solutions. And as I said before, you know, doing the same thing over and over again and expect a different result is just insanity. So let's imagine a better future, and then let's find a way to reach it. Thank you very much for your attention. Thank you. Well, I'm not familiar with the reform bill in detail. And from my talks in the U.S., I hear that many people are now realizing that it's important, it's urgent to do something. I'm very concerned, though, that something is not something is done that is not fundamental, and because of the bad economic climate, it's very probable that it will just be a continuation of current trends. But on the other hand, you know, the very unfortunate law that was passed in Arizona has become kind of a flashpoint. I don't know what's going to happen. It's a very difficult time for the U.S. and for the political system, and we have to recognize that. But then on the other hand, you know, creating 10 or 20 million illegals, it's a pretty tough situation. Where are they going to put them, you know? And again, if America kicks them all out, who's going to do the work? Because the bottom line is that the kind of work that the American unemployed are looking for is not the kind of work that the immigrants do. So I don't know, Walter, what do you think? Difficult.
Thank you. I'm a Central American born in El Salvador, and listening to you, we in Central America share the same challenges you just talked about: immigration, corruption, poverty, narcotraffic now. And we also share the same dream scenario you just mentioned. So have you ever thought of the possibility of a partnership with the Central American countries, and then together as a bigger region, partnering with the U.S.? We can even think of Mesoamerica, Mexico, Central America, and Colombia, and then that would be a bigger block of countries. We could manage to do bigger and greater things with the U.S.
Yes, of course. I'm glad you brought it up, because, you know, Mexicans are very often accused of treating the Central Americans the same way the Americans treat the Mexicans. We learn from our big brothers. Huh? But in my case, we've been very fortunate to have a long relationship with all the Central American countries through our business interests. We run and operate our stores, our bank, and some of our media communications business in Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, in Panama, and also farther south in Peru and Argentina and something in Brazil. But specifically talk about Central America, I mean, it's obvious that a very small country like El Salvador has large problems in the global economy. So talking about integration is definitely the right way to go. And I think that they have made some pretty good advances by eliminating the border, for example, between Guatemala and El Salvador for business purposes. I also know that they're integrating the electricity infrastructure. So I also understand that they're working on some port facilities to have a dry canal. So there's lots of good things going on. But politics is politics, you know. How can we get the leadership to think in these terms? I think that's a big challenge. It can be done. And I'll be very glad to see that. By the way, I have to mention that in Salvador also, the violence is terrible. Also drug-related. Because the mafias are having access to a lot of money produced by the drug trade. And then they're moving into their home territory, armed and dangerous. So that's why, again, it's urgent that we stop prohibition. It takes away the money.
I wonder if you could put a little bit more flesh on the bones of how the dream can be realized. So specifically, what are the first three things that the Mexican government or the Mexican private sector should do, and what should the first three things that the American government and private sector should do?
Well, good. Well, it's a tough question. How, huh? The first thing, I think, in any voyage is to set a target. Where are we going? So moving in that direction requires a lot of change on our side. But we need some help on your side also, as I said, in terms of open mind and support. Unfortunately, the United States has a lot of things to think about in terms of world politics. And because of that, sometimes it neglects thinking about the immediate neighborhood. So on the U.S. side, I think much more involvement and concern about the neighborhood would certainly help us and our politicians to push in the right direction. on our side in Mexico, it's not easy because we have this multi-party system and we're controlled basically by three parties today. And the participation of citizens in the political process is highly obstructed. It's very difficult. So my idea is to break around that. How? By promoting public participation in politics, achieving a change of mindset in the Mexicans. Because now politics is viewed as something for the politicians and is viewed despectively because it's usually associated with corruption and cronyism. So the way to get around that is a lot of education. And we have created a couple of NGOs to support young people want to get into politics, to educate these people, and to allow them to be inserted into the political process and to effect change. It's a long-term thing. It's not a 10-week program. But as I said, the best time to start is 20 years ago. We've got to start with something. I believe that the change is only possible through people. And it's through changing people's mindset that we achieve the other change. We need change both on the U.S. side and on the Mexican side, starting with the minds of people. Yeah, John.
A little bit about what... I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what you're doing in the United States. You mentioned, it was mentioned that you're involved in some philanthropic support of the Latino community here. Yes. It'd be very interesting to hear about that.
Well, we have an organization called Fundación Azteca, and in Mexico it's very, very developed because we have a lot of people in Mexico and we have more resources. But our aim is to improve, the usual education, ecology, and other social projects. We're doing a lot of work right now. We have a fantastic program called Iniciativa Mexico. And this was just closed. We talked to the Mexicans through our television and radio and an industry-wide effort, talking to the Mexican people saying, if you're fed up of just hearing about problems, tell us about what you are doing to change things and tell us about what opportunities you are doing. So this was a public convocatoria, how do you say? A public call for people to send in their projects and their necessities. Very interesting. We got 20,000 participations in just 1 month. So now we're going to sort through all of that, and we've created a special committee to select the winning entries. And then we're going to help those people and organizations to actually go way beyond what they're doing now. So it's a fantastic idea. It's working very well. I hope to be able to do it in the U.S. very soon for the Latino community and through our Fundación Azteca America. So we've done a lot of things for the Latino community, especially in Washington, trying to get the ear of more representatives working on immigration, on fair immigration reform. We went and supported the census, because if the Latinos don't get counted, then they don't count, right? So we had a big push on that. And I'm very proud, but still our company in the States is small. It's getting better, bigger and better every year, but it's not in the same league as Univision or Telemundo. Hopefully we can change that. Yeah, and hopefully we can get those organizations also involved with social action in the Latino community. Because also this thing is leading by example. Once one starts, then the others start to do it. That happened to us with Fundación Azteca in Mexico. We started almost 14 years ago, and now most any businesses in Mexico have a foundation. It didn't used to be like that. So that.
A delicate question. You mentioned getting rid of monopolies in Mexico.
Yeah.
You include the telecommunications in that?
Yes, yes, of course. You know, there's this misconception that when you think of Mexican monopoly, you think about Telmex. But the fact of the matter is Telmex has a lot of competitors, just that we're not very good. And I'm including myself there because we're not very good because we haven't been able to get the results that we want in terms of public preference. And there's lots of criticism against the monopoly, but I would say that there's lots of other... The main monopoly is energy by far. It has a much bigger impact than telecom, number one. The second monopoly is the monopoly of the use of force. That's something that should be monopolized by the government and now it's being privatized through all these gangs. We urgently need a monopoly in that. You know? So it's interesting because sometimes when we want to make Mexico more competitive, we totally miss the mark by saying, well, telecom is the number one. Yeah, you know, I could live without telecom reform for a long time if we got the violence out of the country and if we got the government out of running businesses as important as energy. But yes, I agree with you. It should change. And there's no reason why it should not.
Are there any concrete steps that need to be taken by the government or others to...
In terms of telecom?
Yeah.
Definitely. The government has a regulatory outfit called COFETEL, and it's quite inefficient. You know? They recently had a reshuffling of their members, and the problem, again, with most government organizations is they usually pick people with no experience. So by the time they find out where the bathroom is, it's too late and they have to go. This is a constant in the telecom sector in our country. It's part of the Minister of Communications, which runs roads and airports and infrastructure. But it's not running the... It's very difficult to run a telecom which is always changing and has huge technology developments. They're not good at that. For example, they made a bid to buy. I mean, the government wants to sell some fiber optic lines across the country. The government now has a huge fiber optic infrastructure, almost 100 pairs of fiber optics across all Mexico, and they decide to sell one pair to improve competition, one pair out of 100. And instead, thank you, and instead of, well, so they made a bid for that, they sold it in the process, and they got, I don't know, $20 or $30 million for it, yeah, big deal. But what a short-sighted policy, because what the government should have done is use those 100 pairs of fibers to create a digital infrastructure for internet access to all Mexicans. It was a huge opportunity to close the digital divide and have essentially free access to long-distance internet. And what would it have cost? Maybe $100 million to light up the 100 pairs of fiber? And then Mexico would have had the first and the finest digital backbone across the country. Now, why did they not do it? First, because they don't know that can be done. They really don't know. And second, there's a lack of imagination. And it's there. We already paid for it. The Mexican taxpayers paid for that infrastructure because it's part of the National Energy Power Company. Now, maybe they can do it. I had a good talk with the president 2 days ago about this. And so he looked at me and said, are you sure you can do that? I said, well, look, this is like a road. You know, governments build roads all the time. And they can give it for free or they can charge a toll, whatever. But they do it all the time. So why wouldn't I make a digital road? And Senator, yes.
The United States greatly relies on Pemex for imports to this country of products. So it's of importance to us that that monopoly perhaps not be a monopoly in the future. What do you think is the likelihood that Pemex might privatize some of its operations? I know that they need more investment dollars in the area of exploration, and production seems to be declining from the last time I saw statistics on this.
Yes.
And so I wonder if you think there's any real likelihood that Pemex would begin a road towards some sort of privatization and change. I guess it's a constitutional change that has to take place for that to occur.
Yeah.
And let me piggyback a second question. We're 3 years before the next presidential election. The last presidential election gave me and maybe a lot of other Americans who might be watching a real scare. It was a very close election, and the alternative didn't seem to be someone who would have been a particular friend to the U.S. What do you think in 3 years that there would be a political situation that would avoid the likelihood of a person who would not be constructive either for Mexico or for the bilateral relationship?
Yes. Well, I'll start with Pemex. First, let me say that if reform is going to happen in the energy sector, including Pemex, it's not going to come from Pemex. It's not going to come from the energy sector. It has to come from the political leadership at the highest level. And that's where the three political parties and their leadership are the actors. So the PAN, the ruling party, together with the president and the top party leaders, the PRI, the PRI, through their Senate leadership and their party president, and those two parties could affect the reform if they agree. But the third party, the PRD, which is the left-wing party, they always have had a vocal opposition against any kind of reform in the energy sector. So the thing is, could these two parties get together and overrule this third party? They could. But now, the sad part is the two main parties are at each other's throats. And they're fighting precisely for the 2012 election. And we're seeing, you know, we just had elections on Sunday in Mexico in 12 states. So we're seeing the beginnings of the fight for the next presidential election. It's been very rough. And now accusations are flying on both sides. The opposition, now PRI, who was in power for 80 years, was always accused of running state elections, where the whole power of the state was turned to guarantee a favorable election. Well, now the PAN is being accused of that too, by the opposition guys. It's very complicated. So that's why I think that if we don't change the mindset of the people involved, we're not going to get anywhere. And it's not easy. So do we need more investment in the energy sector in Mexico? Of course we do. Can that company be run much more efficiently? Of course it can. For example, it's the biggest public company in the sense that it belongs to the Mexicans, but does not report like a public company does. I have two public companies, TV Azteca and Elect, and we are forced to do all these kinds of reports, including compliance with the Sarbanes-Oxley Mexican version. Pemex is not obliged to any of that. How about? But we have a few shareholders in the public, and they have all the country as shareholders, but they do not report anything. No transparency. No accountability. Independent board, it's a joke. The board is all management and labor. That's not independent. So how can that company be run as a company? Not. All those things can change. And that would affect a huge positive change and not necessarily involving foreign investment, just better running of the country and of the country's resources, which I think could be easily done. But we need to change people's way of thinking. And again, right now we're seeing a quest for power sake. the ruling party made alliances with the left wing. Now, this is incredible. The left wing PRD never recognized the current president. And now that party has aligned with the parties of the president to put a common candidate for the sole purpose of winning office. Now, how are they going to govern after that? And this just happened in Puebla, in Oaxaca, and Sinaloa. The three states that the PAN won, which are very big, important states, were won in an alliance with the left wing. That's why I say politics is just way too important to be left to the politicians. Thank you very much.